welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you an hour of science fiction, later a broadcast of Dimension X from 1951, but first an episode of the Theater of Romance with a sci-fi twist, and a CBS episode called It Happened Tomorrow, from January 2nd, 1945.
Colgate Tooth Powder's Theater of Romance brings you Ralph Bellamy in the comedy It Happened Tomorrow. And every Tuesday night, Colgate Tooth Powder brings you the Theater of Romance, featuring each week your favorite stars and favorite stories and plays, especially adapted for radio. And here is your host to tell you about tonight's presentation.
Good evening. Tonight we bring you as a New Year's gift one of the year's most unusual pictures, It Happened Tomorrow, starring Ralph Bellamy, the story of a young reporter in a strange adventure. The reporter, Larry Stevens, tells the story.
I'm afraid you'll find it hard to believe the following events. I myself have wondered about them for years, but I still find no explanation. If you think it over, life is full of things we can't explain. So I'm going to tell you what happened and let you judge for yourself. Near the end of the last century, I had my first job as a newspaper reporter and my first girl. I'd just met Sylvia, and I was crazy about her. I was pretty sure that she liked me. She'd come to town to do a mind-reading act at a local cafe with her uncle, who definitely did not like me. He was Sylvia's legal guardian, and she had to marry someone with a steady job and a bank account. On New Year's Eve, after everyone had gone, I was talking to Pop Benson about it. Pop Benson, a small, plump, gray-haired man who was always looking at life and people with friendly curiosity. I told Pop my troubles. I said, "Gee, Pop, if I could only get a scoop. You know what I'd like to have if I could have anything in the world? I'd like to have tomorrow's newspaper. Then I could scoop every paper in the world. Just think of it, Pop."
"Sounds like a mighty fine idea, Larry, but I don't think you'd really be happy if it happened to you."
"Pop, I'd give 10 years of my life for tomorrow's newspaper."
"Well, I wish I had the paper to give you. Might teach you a lesson. The only things that are worth having, Larry, are the things you work for and earn."
"Hey, look at that clock. It's almost midnight. I gotta go. I'm meeting Sylvia after the last show. See you later, Pop. If you come across a copy of tomorrow's paper, save it for me, will you?"
"I sure do that, Larry. You kind of like that young lady, don't you, son?"
"Like her? Oh, Pop. Oh, Pop."
"Well, we better say goodnight here, Larry. I don't want Uncle Walter to see you."
"Do you think 3 weeks is long enough for a fella to be able to say he loves a girl? Academically speaking, of course."
"Oh, well, academically speaking, yes."
"Well, would you think it might be all right for the fella to say so even if the girl had an uncle that didn't like him? Academically speaking, of course."
"Well, of course, as long as we're speaking academically, I'd say if the uncle happened to be the girl's guardian, she couldn't do anything about marrying the fellow until she was of age. That is, if the fellow was thinking of asking the girl to marry him."
"Oh, he is. Of course he is. When'll you be of age, Sylvia?"
"Oh, not for 2 years."
"2 years.
And, Larry, our booking will be up Sunday, and then we're going to Pittsburgh."
"Pittsburgh? Might as well be the North Pole."
"Oh, I know. Larry, if we could only convince Uncle Walter that you're a good reporter before we go, then maybe he'd see things more our way."
"Well, I'll see if I can think of something before tomorrow night. Good night, darling."
"Good night, darling."
I walked Sylvia to her corner, and then I started home. It was late. There were no people on the streets. A fog hung low, misting the buildings, changing the familiar shapes into diffused, frightening shadows. I began to walk faster. And then, suddenly, someone called me?
"Yes, Larry. I did."
"Oh, it's you, Pop. You gave me a scare. What are you doing out so late?"
"I was looking for you, Larry. I wanted to give you this newspaper."
"The Evening News? I read it already, Pop, but thanks."
"Happy New Year, Larry."
"Happy New Year, Pop."
"Good night. Don't lose that paper. Good night."
He was gone as quickly as he'd come. He just disappeared in the fog, leaving me with that newspaper in my hand. I put it in my coat pocket, and I didn't even think of it again until the next morning. I dropped into Hoag's Diner for my breakfast, and a guy I knew that happened to be out of a job asked for it.
Hey, Larry, let me see your paper a minute, will you? I want to take a look at the want ads.
Okay, Joe. It's last night's, though.
That's all right.
Morning, Larry. What'll it be this morning? Ham and eggs?
No, it's a new year. I think I'll eat bacon and eggs this year, Frank.
Right you are.
Say, Larry, this isn't last night's paper. It's today's.
No, Joe. Today's evening news hasn't gone to press yet.
Here's your eggs, Larry.
Say, Frank, you got an ad in the paper for a waiter. Who do I talk to about the job?
We don't need a waiter. We got a waiter. This is Hoag's lunch wagon, not the Ritz.
Well, then why have you got an ad in the paper for a waiter?
Let me see that ad. That's what it says, Frank. Wanted, waiter, Hoag's lunch wagon.
Well, it's a misprint. I'm telling you, we got a waiter.
Get out, you butterfingers! That's the last dishes you'll break here. You call yourself a waiter? You're a hod carrier. You're fired.
Fired? I quit.
And don't come back. Frank, take a dollar from the till and put an ad in the paper right away for a waiter.
A waiter?
An ad for a waiter.
We got to have another man right away. Put it in the evening news.
Joe, give me that paper. I got to get out of here. Give me that paper. Suddenly, I realized what Pop Benson had given me. By some miracle, last night he'd put into my hands tomorrow's newspaper. Here was my chance at fame and fortune. I went back to the office and spread the paper out and studied it. Then I went in to see the boss. Mr. Gordon, who's covering the Melba concert at the Opera House this afternoon?
Cover it. Since when are you the music critic?
I've got a tip that there's going to be a big story break there this afternoon. Some bandits are going to hold up the box office. It's going to happen at 2:10. I can be back with the story by 2:30. You can set up the headlines right now. Bandits steal cash at Opera House while Melba sings. I'll be back as soon as it's over.
Stevens, come back here. Oh, that boy is crazy.
Good afternoon, Mr. Gordon.
Oh, hello, Inspector. Anything wrong?
Plenty. There's been a hold-up at the Opera House.
Hold-up? A hold-up? Hold-up press. Copy, boy. Copy.
Yes, sir.
Send Larry Stevens in right away. Is he here?
Yes, he just came in, sir.
Stevens tipped me off this morning that this was going to happen, but I didn't put much stock in it.
Oh, Stevens tipped you off, did he?
You want me, Mr. Gordon?
Yes. Did you cover the Melba concert?
Yes, sir.
Have you written that story?
Yes, sir. Here it is, sir.
Shall I take it, sir?
Yes. Have this set up in paragraphs. Break down page one. Make it a 2-column spread. Come on. We'll shoot it through.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Gordon.
Say, Mr. Stevens, Mr. Gordon tells me that this morning you said this robbery was going to take place.
That's right, I did.
Just how do you happen to know so much about it?
Well, I had some information.
Uh-huh. Maybe you don't realize it, but you're in a bad spot. Now, look, you better come clean. Where'd you get your information?
Well, you won't believe me, but I read it in the newspaper this morning.
Oh, you did? What newspaper?
Today's Evening News.
Do you expect anyone to believe that?
No. I find it very hard to believe myself, but it's true. You see, I wanted to marry Sylvia, and her uncle said I should have security and a bank account, and I said I wished I could see tomorrow's paper, and Pop Benson got it for me. If you'll just ask him...
All right, son, you had your chance. You better come down, think it over at headquarters.
Oh, now, look...
Come on, Stevens.
I am not a happy man. I am not a happy man.
Now for the second act of It Happened Tomorrow, starring Ralph Bellamy as Larry Stevens. We pick up the story a few hours later. Larry sitting despondently in jail after being cross-examined by the police. As he sits there, he hears a voice outside, and he runs to the small barred window and peers down at the street. He can barely see the shadowy figure through the fog.
Larry.
Pop Benson.
It wasn't worth 10 years of your life, was it, Larry?
It's all over for you. Where have you been?
Just taking a vacation, my boy.
I'm going half crazy. Did I meet you last night or did I dream it? Did you give me a newspaper?
Didn't do you any good, did it, Larry?
I'm in a jam, Pop. Nobody believes me. I can't get out of here.
Oh, you'll get out any minute now. It says here you told the police where to pick up the bandits.
Don't tell me that's tomorrow's Evening News.
That's right. I brought it for you, Larry.
What does it say about the holdup?
It says here they made an arrest in the morning at the Union Bank. That'll be 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. The police were waiting at the bank when the bandits got there. You wrote this story, Larry. You've got your byline again. Here, let me poke the paper through the bars. Good night, Larry.
Pop Benson,
Don't go. I've got to talk to you.
You don't need me now, Larry. All you have to do is tell the police where to make the arrest, and they'll let you go. Good night, Larry.
Pop! Pop! Pop Benson! Wait!
You hollering for me, Larry?
No, I was just... wait a minute. Sure, I was hollering for you, Inspector. I'm going to tell you where you can get those bandits.
Uncle Walter, please be reasonable.
I am being reasonable. You're not going to marry this cub reporter, Sylvia. Why, this cub, or what do you think you live on?
Well, I make $22.75 a week.
No. Absolutely, positively, irrevocably, unconditionally, no. He has to have a raise in the bank account before he'll ever have my consent to marry you.
All right, sir. I'll get the raise, and I'll get the bank account. I went home and spent the rest of the night walking and thinking. I thought I could promote the raise, but the bank account had me stumped. I did promote the raise, thanks to Pop. Mr. Gordon, I got a story. I got a scoop.
Is that it in your hand?
Yep, it's all ready to go to press. But first, I got to have a raise.
Is it a good story?
You bet it is.
All right. From now on, you're making $25 a week.
Oh, gee, thanks, Mr. Gordon.
Now, what's your story?
The police just trapped those Opera House bandits at the Union Bank.
What?
I was there. It's an exclusive.
Give it to me. Copy boy!
Later in the afternoon, the fellows accidentally gave me the lead I was looking for. They told me how to get my bank account. I'd been bragging that I could find out anything I wanted to know.
Say, Larry, if that's true, you could have more money than you'd know what to do with.
Yeah? How?
By picking all five winners at the racetrack tomorrow.
One more newspaper would do it. Just one more newspaper. I spent the rest of the day hunting for Pop Benson, but he was nowhere to be found. Finally, I went over to his house on Sacramento Street and sat down on the front steps, waiting. It was almost morning before he came home.
For me, Larry?
I sure have been waiting. Pop, I've been sitting here all night. Pop, will you give me one more newspaper?
No, Larry, I don't think I can give you another one.
Pop, please, you can't let me down. I'll never ask you for one again, I swear it. I've just got to know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Well, all right, Larry, I'll give it to you, but it won't do you any good.
All I want to know is what horses will win. Then I'll be rich and I can marry Sylvia and...
Here it is. But you better take a look at the front page first, Larry.
Larry Stevens, evening news reporter, was shot to death in the lobby of the St. George Hotel at 6:25 today, just before the evening news went to press. Pop. Pop! It couldn't be.
I told you you wouldn't want to see it, Larry. Good night.
Pop! Pop!
Good night, Larry.
I stood there, cold to the very marrow of my bones, my heart pounding. The next hours that passed were like a crazy nightmare. I went to see Sylvia and her uncle. I pleaded and threatened and made promises until at last he consented to let us get married. We were married at noon. I had the justice that married us draw up my will. Then we went to the racetrack and I picked the winners. I won $60,000 for Sylvia. That didn't do me any good either because we were held up driving back to town and the whole amount was stolen. I wandered into the news office a little after 6, determined I wouldn't be at the St. George Hotel at 6:25. Yet, somehow, sure I would be. And there...
Oh, there you are, Larry. Say, did you hear about Pop Benson?
No, what about him?
The old man's dead.
Dead?
Yeah, they... found him a little while ago at home. They figure he died about 3 nights ago, New Year's Eve.
Dead? 3 nights ago?
He was a great guy. Remember how he liked to play jokes on people?
Pop Benson. Dead.
Stevens, look at that clock. 6:10. How long do you expect to hold down your job?
Not very long, Mr. Gordon, if that's the right time.
Well, I'll give you another chance. I got an assignment for you. I got a tip that something big is going to break.
I know. At the St. George Hotel.
Oh, you know everything, don't you? All right, get in a cab and get over there right away.
No, you don't. I'm not going near that place. Send someone else in that assignment or cover it yourself. I'm not going near the St. George Hotel. I ran out and got in the carriage. I told the driver to go anywhere as long as he went away from the St. George Hotel. I was in a cold sweat as we drove along. Suddenly he pulled to a stop and I looked out the window and...
Here you are. St. George Hotel, sir.
I told you to go away from the St. George Hotel.
Oh, is that what you said, sir? Must have misunderstood you.
I looked around in desperation. Then I suddenly saw a man go up the stairs into the lobby. And I recognized him as the man who had held us up and stolen our $60,000. I forgot about the story. I forgot that I was to die in the St. George Hotel at 6:25. I forgot everything except that there was my man and there was my chance to get my $60,000. I let out one yell and lit out after him. Stop, thief! Stop, thief! I chased him into the lobby. Others joined me, but we outdistanced them. Up five flights of stairs, out of the roof. And then my blood suddenly chilled. I caught a glimpse of the town clock, and the hands were at 6:25. I saw the man turn and raise his gun. Then a mighty silent darkness closed in around me.
Hey, Chief, I got it. I shot him. Right through the heart.
Okay, Robertson, any identification on him?
Yeah, here's his wallet. It says, Larry Stevens, Evening News. I better phone his paper right away.
Hey, wait a minute. What's the matter with this other guy over here?
Oh, the one that was chasing this Stevens? He's all right. He just fainted, Chief.
And that's exactly what had happened to me. The cops had come up behind me. They'd seen the man raise his arm to shoot, and they'd shot first. I'd seen the clock at 6:25, the man raising the gun, and I'd passed out cold. Of course, it was my wallet they found on the thief, and that's how the story got in the papers. The wallet was empty, but I didn't care. I walked into the newspaper office a little while later, so happy and so relieved, I was practically crying.
Larry Stevens, the best reporter I ever had. I'll never replace him, never.
You won't have to, Mr. Gordon.
What? Stevens. Stevens, are you alive, boy?
Yes, sir, of course I'm alive.
What do you mean, being alive and spoiling a good story? The papers are already out. Evening News reporter dies heroically at scene of duty.
I can give you a better one.
Yeah? What?
Evening News reporter returns from the dead.
Hey, I'll take that, Stevens. I'll take that. Oh, and Stevens, there's a check for $500 in the office. I was going to set up a little monument for you, but I think I'll give it to you for a honeymoon instead. I understand you got married today.
Oh, golly, thank you, Mr. Gordon. Thank you. I'll see that the first edition is called Gordon Stevens. So it all turned out all right after all. I was $500 richer, and I had a better sense of values, and I had Sylvia. And once I had found her that night and heard her say...
Oh, Larry, darling, you're so wonderful, and I'm so proud of you. Larry, I love you so much.
Once I'd heard Sylvia say that, I knew it didn't matter what happened tomorrow. I knew that whatever happened would be good because she'd be beside me.
I love you very much, Larry. I'll love you forever.
You see, that's all you ever really need to know about tomorrow.
Young lady, why did he act that way? When you showed him the snapshots of you at the beach, why did he take them over to the window? I wonder, was it a little breath of trouble that made him move away? It's too bad if you should let that little breath of trouble, I mean unpleasing breath, ruin your romance. I'll tell you what, brush your teeth night and morning and before every date with Colgate tooth powder. Scientific tests prove that Colgate tooth powder, in 7 cases out of 10, instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. So use Colgate tooth powder for all it's worth. Money can't buy a dentifrice that will clean your teeth better than Colgate tooth powder. Remember the name, Colgate tooth powder, with the accent on powder.
Don't take a chance with your romance.
Use Colgate tooth powder.
Ralph Bellamy, who starred in tonight's play, will soon be seen in Guest in the House, a Hunt Stromberg production. Next week, it's our pleasure to bring you Somerset Maugham's dramatic masterpiece of love and intrigue, The Letter, featuring Judith Evelyn. Until next Tuesday, when Colgate Tooth Powder's Theater of Romance will bring you The Letter, this is your host saying good night and wishing you love, happiness, and romance.
It Happened Tomorrow is a United Artists release whose current dramatic production is Tomorrow the World. In tonight's production, Pop Benson was played by Edgar Staley, Gordon by Frank Rettig, and Joan Allison appeared as Sylvia. The adaptation was made especially for this program by Gene Holloway. Say, Judy Canova is coming back. Yes, folks, that wacky, lovable scatterbrain will be back on the air with all her old gang next Saturday night over another network. See your local paper for the station. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Theater of Romance on Tuned to Yesterday from the 2nd of January, 1945 on CBS. This is an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Now in time for an episode of Dimension X from August 23rd, 1951. 5 broadcasts after this episode, the program would go off of the air and had been on since April of 1950, to then be revived in 1955 on NBC's new sci-fi series using many of the same stories called X-1. This show, written by Frank M. Robinson, is called Untitled Story.
Adventures in time and space, told in future tense. National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, bring you Dimension X.
My name is Donald Haysen, private investigator. Maybe you heard about me. I cracked the Turner kidnapping back in 1946. It wasn't very hard. I paid off a few stool pigeons and went right to the hideout. It did my reputation a lot of good, though. Enough good for me to be called into the mayor's office down at City Hall to see Big Mike Flaherty himself.
Well, sit down, Hitchin. Sit down.
Thanks.
You'll have to forgive me for speaking so low.
That's a bad case of laryngitis.
Yes, it is. Hitchin, I've been a fool.
You wouldn't get to be mayor of a city like this by being a fool.
Well, you know, Haitian, when you get old, you want to believe a lot of things. You want to believe so hard that sometimes you throw your common sense right out of the window. You get hardening of the cranial arteries, you become stupid.
Well, what's the pitch, Mr. Mayor? You didn't call me in to discuss the philosophy of growing old gracefully.
Haitian, I want you to do some investigating for me. Now, naturally, it must be confidential.
This is a confidential business.
All right. Yesterday, a man came into this office and sold me a vial of radioactive water that he called the elixir of life. It's supposed to cure you of any disease and keep you healthy enough so you live 100 years.
It's none of my business, Mr. Mayor, but how much did you drop on this gold brick?
It's about $50,000.
You don't seem the type somehow.
I'll come a little closer, Jason. I'm going to tell you something my political opponents would give their right arms to know. This isn't laryngitis.
It isn't?
It's inaccessible for surgery. X-rays would be dangerous. How much time I have left, I don't know. But I live like a man who's going to the chair. Hasten, if I want a vacation, I pack up and go. If I want a drink, I take one. If somebody comes to me with a vial of liquid and says it'll keep me alive, I think twice before I throw him out as a crackpot.
What do you want me to do? Get your money back?
No, the money isn't important.
You mean if the loyal opposition got hold of the story, they could use it against you?
That's part of it, Asian. However, you don't have the whole picture yet. Shortly after I bought the stuff, I received an anonymous phone call. I was warned not to take it. I was told it was poison and would kill me in a matter of seconds.
Ah, the plot thickens.
Now you can appreciate my position. I feel like a man who can either save his life or destroy himself by taking that stuff.
Well, the phone call might be a hoax.
Yes, and so might the elixir of life.
Yeah, very likely. What do you want me to do about it?
Investigate the man who sold it to me. Find out who's behind him, what he knows, where he goes. Nothing else, I want that 50 grand back.
What's in it for me?
A grand, if he's on the level. 10% if you get the dough back. Deal?
Deal.
Here's the vial. And here's his card.
Uh-huh. Arthur C. Lehman, longevity experts, 45 Billings Courts. Okay, Mr. Mayor, you got yourself a boy.
Good. I'll leave your working name and phone number with my secretary. I'll have her send you a check.
Right, I'll call you.
You were in there a long time. How'd you make out?
Swell, I bought the outer drive for only $10 and the cost of mailing.
That's kind of high. Last week we were selling it for only $5.
I'm sorry, I've been listening to too many detective programs.
It isn't polite to stare.
I was just wondering what your name was.
Sign on the desk says Katharina Cooper.
I'll call you Kathy. Oh, I'm supposed to leave my name and phone number.
Go ahead.
The name is Donald Hasten. But then you knew that, honey. You've been listening to the mayor call me by it for the last half hour. You forgot to shut off the intercom switch. Big Mike's getting kind of careless, isn't he? On her face said she was feeding me to the vultures piece by piece. I left my card and walked out. By the time I got home, it was dusk. It was the time of early evening when every bachelor wishes he wasn't one, especially after meeting a girl like Kathy. The phone began to ring just as I put my key in the latch. I made it on the fourth ring. Hello?
Is this Mr. Donald Hasten?
I live alone and don't like it. Were you expecting someone else to answer?
Warning, Mr. Hasten. Don't touch your bed.
I'm sorry, but I don't like to sleep on the floor. The joys of being a private detective. Oh, hello, Jocko. How's my boy? That's a good boy. Oh, Jocko, be glad you're not a private detective with all kinds of crackpots calling you up and trying to get your goat. Nice boy. Sometimes I wish I had shaggy ears like you so I couldn't hear them. Come on, boy, come on. In the bedroom for a change or something comfortable. What's the matter, boy? You want to go out? Well, you just wait until I sit down here and get these shoes. Hey there, don't jump on that bed, Fred. Now, you know better than that. Jocko! Oh, God. The bedspread closed on him the way a Venus flytrap closes on a fly. When I looked more closely, I saw that the bedspread had silvery threads of fine spring steel woven into it. It had been set like a bear trap to spring shut and strangle anything that touched it. Somebody wanted to get rid of me pretty badly. Somebody to whom I had suddenly become very dangerous. Instead, they got Jocko. My poor little Jocko. I decided to take a fast drive over to Billings Court to see Arthur Lehman, longevity expert.
Well, what?
I'm looking for Mr. Lehman's office.
I'm the janitor.
You didn't need to explain.
He isn't in. Mr. Lehman isn't in.
I just said I was looking for his office.
Oh, a detective.
Now, I'm really a vacuum cleaner salesman. I just had these credentials printed up for fun. Here, buy your wife a muskrat coat.
I can't take any money. I just keep this till it's spent.
What floor is it on?
Up those steps, rear.
Thanks. Well, let's see now. I ought to have one that fits this. There should be a light switch somewhere. Let's see if I could.
Perhaps I can be of assistance. Looking for someone?
Mr. Lehman?
Yes.
The janitor told me you weren't in, so I...
You picked
the lock.
Yes, I hope you don't mind.
Not at all.
If you'd put down the gun.
I like to hold it. It gives me a feeling of power. Now, Mr.
Hasten.
Mr. Hasten, if you will tell me just who you are and what you're doing here.
I couldn't sleep. My bed had a dead dog in it. I thought I should consult a health expert.
Who sent you?
Nobody sent me. I'm like Topsy. I just growed. I'd like to keep on growing, Mr. Lehman. I don't like people trying to kill me. And I don't like people killing my dog.
What makes you think I would try to kill you?
Just a hunch.
If I really wanted to kill you, I could do it right now, perfectly legally, since you broke in here.
That'd be hard to prove.
Fortunately for you, Mr. Hasten, I don't have the faintest interest in trying to kill you. On the contrary, it was I who telephoned and warned you about that bed.
You know about that phone call?
I ought to. I made it.
What's the pitch, Mr. Lehman?
I can't tell you what the pitch is, Mr. Hasten. But I will tell you this. Give that vial of liquid back to Flaherty and let him cure himself.
Or poison himself.
Sure.
Look, Mr. Lehman, I wasn't born yesterday. Don't give me this elixir of life stuff. There ain't no such thing. And don't try to top me off this case by pretending you're on my side.
Mr. Hasten, I warn you, you're playing around with something much too big for you to handle. That vial is the only one of its kind in existence today. The liquid it contains will cure Flaherty if he drinks it.
You know, I've seen lots of carnival men peddling flukum and ink sticks, but you're good. You almost convinced me. Almost, but not quite.
You're a very stubborn fool, Mr. Hasten.
Give back that 50 grand and I'll become very unstubborn.
I have a suggestion.
I'll bet you do.
Why don't you siphon off the tiniest drop of that elixir and have it tested on, say, a rabbit? Then, if it's non-poisonous, you can go back to Flaherty and have him drink it.
And while we're proving it's Carmel water, you're on a fast boat to Outer Mongolia with 50 G's.
Come with me.
Where to?
A reputable biological laboratory, any one you choose.
Suppose I don't want to play.
Then I'll kill you. You will feel my gun against your side, so don't try anything. Shall we go?
Before we do, just one thing.
Well?
If you didn't try to kill me, who did?
Who else knew about it?
Nobody. Nobody except Flaherty, you, me, and Flaherty's secretary.
Shall we go, Mr. Hasten?
Such a test. Of course, we'd mean injecting at least a cc into an infected guinea pig. Then we'd have to wait and do a biopsy.
How long would it take?
24 hours at least.
Okay, how much?
$50.
My friend will pay you.
Your friend?
Yeah, the gentleman will... Holy jumping sunfish.
Sir?
Look, you saw me come in with a guy just a minute ago, didn't you?
Yes, sir, but he left when you started talking to me.
Isn't that just dandy?
Is something wrong?
No, nothing much. You know what Barnum said about one being born every minute?
Yes, sir.
Well, he was talking about me. Well, I better get going.
Well, yes, sir. Oh, sir. What about that test?
Okay, I suppose you might as well do it just for laughs. Send the report on the bill to Donald Hasten, private investigator, Cater Building.
Yes, sir.
I knew there wasn't much point in going back after Lehman. He was probably well on his way by this time. It was an all-around phony story from beginning to end. But still somewhere, hanging around the edges of my brain, was a funny kind of hunch. If Lehman had wanted to kill me, then who called me up to warn me? Lehman himself? Why? It didn't figure. I stopped to look up an address in the phone book, and then I invested 10 cents. Kathy?
Yes?
This is Sherlock.
Oh, I'm glad.
Glad?
That you called. I mean, I wanted to apologize to you for eavesdropping this afternoon.
Why don't you do it over a cup of coffee? I have to talk to you.
It's very late.
Well, sleep late tomorrow, please.
All right. Well, I meet you.
There's a coffee shop near your place. I'll be there in 15 minutes. Came in wearing a blue nylon dress and a short gray jacket. They went real well with her blue eyes and soft blonde hair. She seemed genuinely happy to see me. It threw me for a few seconds. And then I reminded myself I had already won the P.T. Barnum Award once that night. Sit down, Kathy.
What is it?
Do you know a man named Arthur C. Lehman?
Am I supposed to?
I'll refresh your memory. I had a talk with His Honor about him.
I don't remember.
Look, I used to have a little Scotch terrier named Jocko. We liked each other. He used to lick my hand. All I want to know is, are you mixed up in it? What goes on?
I don't know anything about it.
Listen, Kathy, maybe I'm getting sentimental in my old age, but for a moment there, when you walked in, I thought you seemed genuinely glad to see me. Was it because you were glad I was still alive? Come on, give.
Don, I like you. You're a nice guy. Why don't you let it alone? Call Flaherty and turn down the assignment. Give him back his vial and tell him you're not interested in finding Lehman. Would you do it?
If you want to help me so much, why not tell me what it's all about?
I can't. I'd like to, but I can't. I've told you too much already.
Somebody's got you real scared, honey. Who is it? You're too nice a girl to be mixed up in this garbage with a guy like Lehman. Come on, tell me.
I can't. Just believe that, please. Get out of it now before it's too late.
Okay, honey, you can play it that way if you want, but to me it's as thin as a bowl of restaurant soup. Poor Jocko knew something and couldn't tell me. You know something and you won't tell me. Good night. I didn't go home. I spent the night in a local YMCA and I didn't sleep very well. It went around and around in my brain like a squirrel in a cage, but it didn't add up to anything when it came out. In the morning, I went straight to my office and locked myself in with a bottle of gin. By 10 o'clock, I had decided to quit the job, but before I could call Flaherty and tell him, the phone rang. Go ahead.
Mr. Hayson.
You got it.
This is Dr. Gregory, the Bayside Biological Laboratory.
If you want the money...
It isn't about the money.
What's up?
Mr. Hayson... Do you have the formula for that serum you gave me?
No, I know a guy who might, but he's in Outer Mongolia by now. Why?
Well, I've never seen anything quite like it. I don't know if it was just a freak of fate or
what happened?
Well, that pig, that diseased guinea pig, Mr. Hayson, well, it completely recovered in 12 hours. Not only that, Mr. Hayson, but there is not a trace of the malignancy. That pig looks healthy enough to live another 100 years.
I could feel the sweat soaking into my undershirt as I put down the receiver. Where do we go from here? Was Lehman on the level after all? The next stop was Lehman's office. Maybe he wasn't in Outer Mongolia. It was noon before I got there. The same janitor was on duty in the same dirty lobby. Hello there.
Hi. You want something?
Lehman.
Who?
Lehman.
I haven't heard of him.
Now, wait a minute, Junior. You remember me. Last night, $5, rear office, first floor.
I don't know what you're talking about, mister.
Oh, you want another $5, huh, Junior? Well, this time I don't buy. Get out of my way.
Now, listen, mister. I can't let you just walk into that office.
I'll try to stop me if you want to work tomorrow.
But there's nobody in there. That office has...
We'll see about that, Junior, right now. Holy mackerel.
I told you, mister.
Was bare. There were caps on the electrical outlets. Everything in the room was covered by a 6 weeks accumulation of dust that was undisturbed except for the footprints of the janitor and myself. Yet yesterday there had been a rug, telephones, desk, chairs, file cabinets. I checked the door number. 1B, that was it, all right. Then I checked the janitor. He was standing there just looking stupid. But he looked a little too stupid. I figured I could make him talk, so I tried an old trick. I reached inside my hat band, took out an ordinary pin, and jabbed him hard on the arm.
Hey, Al! What's the big idea, mister?
Sit down, Junior. Sit down over here on the window ledge.
Okay. Now, listen, I don't know anything.
Maybe you saw something like this in the movies, Junior. There's this guy, see, a killer. And he sticks another guy with a needle that has a slow poison on the end of it. Like I have, right in this little glass vial. See it? And only this killer has the antidote. If the other guy doesn't talk, it's curtains in 1 minute. If he does, the killer will give him the antidote. Okay, Junior, talk.
Well, I don't believe you. There's no poison in that pin. It's a joke.
It's up to you, Junior. Don't you feel something different, though? Feel your heart speed up a little from the poison?
Now, listen, I don't know anything.
It makes you sweat, too. When it reaches the brain, that's when it really begins to work. You got 30 seconds to spill. Otherwise...
Please.
25 seconds.
Okay. Okay. He was here. He gave me $100 to forget it. He rented the office only a couple of days ago. And then last night he said he was moving out. Said I shouldn't mention to anybody that he'd been here. An hour later he was gone. Files, furniture and all. Don't know how I moved all that stuff out so fast. Now that's all I know. Honest, that's all I know. Now for God's sake, mister, give me that stuff. Don't let me just croak. I feel it.
Look, relax, up. Junior. There was no poison. You're all right.
A trick.
Yeah, a trick. Thanks for the information.
A trick. He tricked me. He said he'd kill me.
Thanks again.
There was Mr. Hasten again, right back on the horns of ye old dilemma. The only thing I knew for sure at this point was that the serum was apparently not poisonous. And since my client was most concerned with that, I made my next stop the office of His Honor, Mayor Big Mike Flaherty. I had the vial in my coat pocket. Hello, beautiful.
Oh.
I want to see His Honor.
He isn't in.
I'll go into his office and wait.
You can't.
But I can. Come on in. I want to talk to you anyway.
Please.
Come on. Shut the door, huh? No? Okay, I'll shut it. Now sit. Okay, baby. Let's have a heart-to-heart conversation.
I see you didn't listen to my warning.
No, I didn't. What's more, I found out that this layman character is on the level about the serum. It works.
You found that out, too?
That's right. It leads me to an interesting conclusion, Kathy. Namely, that you're the one who tried to booby-trap me.
All right. Have it your way. What do you intend to do?
Well, first, I'm going to give Flaherty that serum and let him cure himself.
You mustn't do that.
Why not?
I can't tell you, but you mustn't. Down in a few minutes, Mike Flaherty will be here. Before he comes, I'll have to ask you to give me that serum.
Try again. I don't hear so good.
Maybe you'll hear this. It works, too, so don't try anything.
Well, well. So now it comes out. Okay, Kathy, if you want to play that way, go ahead.
Give me that serum.
Why don't you shoot?
I warn you, I may have no choice. Give it to me.
Pull the trigger, baby. You're weakening.
Don, please, don't make me kill you. Please.
What is it, baby? True love or just weak in the knees?
Oh,
you better handle that gun.
Oh, Don. Don, what can I do? I'm so mixed up.
Yeah, that's better. Now, what is it, Kathy? You're no killer. Tell me what's going on here. Maybe I can help you. You got to trust me.
No, no, I can't, Don. Believe me. I want to, but it's against the prime injunction.
The what?
Oh, you wouldn't understand. There's no way I could make you understand. Only believe me, Don, that I love you. You mustn't let Layman succeed in giving that serum to Mike Flaherty. The consequences would be unimaginable.
You know, Kathy, if you had come to me and leveled right at the start, maybe we could have worked something out. Maybe I'd be listening to you now. But you're a little late because I just heard Big Mike come into the outer office. He'll be here in a second.
Don't, please.
Come in.
How do you do?
Layman.
I see she's been trying to get the vial from you, Mr. Hasten. I was afraid of that. I came over to make certain that Mr. Flaherty is permitted to drink the serum.
Well, that's very noble of you, Layman, but I don't quite understand it. You have your 50 grand. What do you care whether Mike Flaherty lives or dies?
Mr. Hasten, if Mike Flaherty dies, the opposition candidate will win the next election. That means a new political party will come into dominance in this city. The next president will be a representative of that party. I am most anxious to see that that does not happen. The entire future of our country, indeed, the history of the world, would be affected by it.
He's telling the truth, Don. But events must be allowed to take their normal course.
Don't listen to her, Hasten. She's tried to kill you once. She'd do it again. You know I'm telling the truth about that serum. She wants to see Flaherty die. Go ahead, ask her.
It's true, isn't it, Kathy? You want Mike Flaherty to die.
You don't understand.
Listen, I'm getting pretty fed up with being told I don't understand. Understand what? I understand that in the past 24 hours, somebody's tried to kill me. I understand that Layman's serum will cure a guinea pig and probably a human. I understand that unless I'm completely insane, the entire contents of Layman's office vanished in a few minutes. I understand that you two seem to be more concerned with some nonsense that's going to take place in the future than... Holy smokes. Oh, no, no, it's too fantastic. Just too fantastic to even think about.
Something troubling you, Mr. Hasten? Perhaps I can help you.
Perhaps you can, Layman. I'm going to ask you just one question.
Very well.
When are you from? That does it, doesn't it, Mr. Layman? I've guessed your game.
I'm afraid you have, Mr. Hasten. I am, as you surmise, a traveler from the future. And since you've stumbled upon it, perhaps Miss Cooper here would like to fill in her part of the story. But before she does, up your hands, both of you. Higher. Don't move. I'll take that gun, Mr. Hasten. Now, Miss Cooper, you may enlighten our backward friend.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Both Layman and myself are from the future, Don.
Why didn't you tell me?
I couldn't. The prime injunction to time travelers is never to reveal their identity. The penalty is death. Since you've guessed it as we feared you might, there's no point in trying to conceal anything further.
Go on.
Mr. Layman's a fugitive from the era in which we live. Using one of our time machines, he came back to your time. And he sought to change things so that he'd be in a position of great power in the future.
How do you figure to do that?
If Flaherty lived long enough, he could dominate the political picture in America.
You're almost right, except in one detail, Miss Cooper. Flaherty will not survive. He will live only long enough to gain a position of political dominance. Then I will remove him, and my own ancestor will take over the reins of power, leaving them eventually to me.
I get it now. But there's one thing that bothers me. Who was trying to kill me?
I was. You see, I was sent here to track down Layman. I set that spring before I met you, as soon as Flaherty hired you to help him. I did it on orders from the council. They were afraid you'd be successful in saving Flaherty's life. Then, unfortunately, I fell in love with you and couldn't go through with it. I called and warned you.
You took credit for that, Layman.
I wanted to enlist you on my side, Mr. Hasten. However, it makes little difference at this point, since you know the entire story. I have little choice now.
Do you think you can get away with this?
I believe I can, Mr. Hasten.
There are two of us here who know your plans.
By the time Mr. Flaherty returns to his office, there will be only one. Myself. Goodbye, Mr. Hasten. It has been a pleasure.
Not without a fight, you... Not many people know how it feels to be shot in the forest. I saw Kathy jump toward the desk and push a button I hadn't noticed before. I remember a thud as if I'd been sandbagged, and then watching in amazement as the crimson spread down the front of my shirt. Then there was a loud roaring noise and everything went black. I died.
Don't try to move, Don. Don't move yet. It'll take a few minutes for you to feel like yourself.
What? Holy jumping sunfish. I'm sitting in Flaherty's office. The blood. There was blood on my shirt and it's gone now.
Here, drink this.
I don't understand it. Have I been dreaming? Is the whole thing nothing but a nightmare? Well, it seemed so real that there was a man named Layman. He pointed a gun at my head and shot me. I felt it, I tell you, I felt it.
Don, listen to me. Listen carefully, there isn't much time. And please, darling, please this time believe me. Listen.
Go ahead.
You were in this room. Layman did shoot you. He killed you.
You're insane.
No. What he didn't know was that this office is a time machine. We rigged it that way, hoping to trap him here and take him back to future time. When I saw he was about to shoot you, I jumped for the switch that sets the machine into reverse. We went back into the past, before he killed you. That's where we are now. It's only a few minutes before Layman is going to knock on that door and come into the office.
But it's too fantastic to believe, Kathy.
It's true.
What can I do?
Break the vow. Break it now, before Layman gets here. And then, when he comes, get the jump on him. Since you're the one who went back in time, you'll remember, but Layman won't.
What'll happen to us?
We'll appeal to the council. Perhaps they'll let us stay together.
I can't make my brain believe this, Kathy.
You must, Don. Don, for our own sake, for the future's sake. Break the vial now. In a moment, it'll be too late.
Well, I don't know, Kathy. Clarity, his life depends on this little glass bottle.
Don, please. It's Lehman. Don, you've got to decide now. Now, quick. Thank God.
Come in, Mr. Lehman. We're ready for you.
Just heard another adventure into the unknown world of the future. The world of...
Dimension X.
Dimension X is presented each week by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of the magazine Astounding Science Fiction. Today, Dimension X has presented... Untitled Story from the current issue of Astounding Science Fiction. It was written for radio by George Lefferts from the story by Frank M. Robinson. Featured in the cast were George Pete Ray as Hasten, Ann Sargent as Kathy, Bernard Lenro as Layman. Your host was Norman Rose, music by Albert Furman. Dimension X is produced by William Welch and directed by Fred Way. Dragnet, the story of your police force, is next on NBC.
Dimension X, Untuned to Yesterday from August 23rd, 1951 on NBC. Wrapping up this hour of sci-fi, Untuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.